Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday, if you want to get your requests in, Triple Play Thursday. It's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. We are going to play another round of Wood Esmeralda, Buy That. That's coming up a little bit later on. And, yeah, and I guess the crew here is going to do something for my birthday, which is today. So I guess that's coming up a little bit later on. But right now I want to welcome to the studio our good friends Colin Suter and Eric Childress. They join me every Monday morning to review new movies. And it's really hard. Every year we say the same thing, that I can't believe it's already 6 months in. And we're halfway through the movie year. So every year we like to get together live in studio and talk about the 10 best movies of the year so far and the 10 worst movies of the year so far, because we're halfway point. So I welcome Eric and Colin to the studio. Hey, guys.
Hello there.
How are you?
Good.
Good. So let's talk a little bit about the year thus far. Colin, what do you think so far?
So far, not bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like a typical kind of first 6 months. You know, I think there's maybe two or three movies in my top 10 list I could see their way to the end of the year. I've only seen one of the movies twice so far. So, you know, I'd be curious to see a bunch of the other ones too. But so far, I would say not bad.
Okay. Eric, what about you?
I think the best is yet to come. Having been to a few festivals and knowing a few films that are on the horizon, my perception gets to be a little skewed sometimes of how the year goes. But just making the list that we're going to go through tonight, 8 to 10, not going to last very long. I'm just going to say that.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, I think it's been a pretty good year. A lot of solid stuff and a few really great things. But, yeah, I mean, I think I know that on the horizon there are things that I'm really, really looking forward to. And, you know, two of them are coming out this month.
Yeah.
One of them is the War for the Planet of the Apes, and the other is Dunkirk. And those two in July alone are two movies that have the possibility of being high on my list. Well, it's a Christopher Nolan movie with one title.
That's right.
With a one-word title.
It doesn't start with I, though.
Yeah, I know.
So,
we'll see. I-N.
It doesn't start with D. It starts with D, and that's what The Dark Knight starts with.
Uh-oh.
So,
yeah. So, but IN, you know,
yeah, it's, that's true.
Because all three of the movies with the IN are the ones that I.
That's right.
So anyway, all right. So that's what we're, you know, it's 2017. We're halfway through the year. So let's get going. I'll start out. And we're doing the 10 best movies first, the 10 best movies of 2017 so far first. And we'll talk about them. And I'll start with my number 10. And my number 10 is John Wick Chapter 2. Keanu Reeves, crazy ass follow up to The Sleeper. And then John Wick was what I think the true definition of a sleeper, wasn't it?
After it left theaters, I think more so. I mean, it's sort of the movie that kind of developed a cult following after. I mean, it did okay in the theaters, and then on cable and DVD is where it really kind of found its footing.
Yeah, and it really has a lot of really passionate fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm one of them. And I love the first movie, and I thought the second movie was great. And pretty much nonstop action, and it's you know, it's so in the wheelhouse with what I think Keanu Reeves does best, which is not talk a lot and just beat the crap out of people and shoot 73 guys. And it's also, it's the first movie is one of these movies that now is kind of quietly been pretty influential. Mm-hmm. Considering another movie that's coming out in July that I'm looking forward to, which you've seen.
Yeah.
Atomic Blonde.
Right.
Which is from that same camp.
Yeah, the director who was actually uncredited on the first John Wick directed Atomic Blonde.
Yeah.
And now is doing the Deadpool sequel.
Oh, he is? Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right. And I understand that there's, you know, there's actually the funny thing about Atomic Blonde is that there is, you know, a giant cardboard display in movie theaters that's just about the stairwell scene.
Yeah.
It's just the entire thing is quotes about the stairwell scene and a still of her kicking some guy's ass in the stairwell scene. So they're just taking one scene from the movie and making giant cardboard displays in movie theaters just about that one scene.
Well, you could pick like three really good scenes in the movie and do one of those cardboard cutouts.
Yeah.
Rest of the movie, maybe not so much.
Yeah. All right. Well, John Wick Chapter 2, I loved it. Action-packed, really good. It is available on DVD right now. And I highly recommend it. It's my 10th favorite movie of the year. So, all right, Colin?
My number 10 is The Lost City of Z. This was a really terrific kind of old-fashioned almost adventure film.
And it had the displeasure of opening opposite The Fast and the Furious 9 yeah. or whatever the hell it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it got buried, which is really too bad. But it's from director James Gray, who has, he's kind of hit and miss. But, I mean, his movies are usually pretty stunning, and this was no exception. And this is a great sort of adventure film, but not in like the Indiana Jones kind of adventure, but like sort of an old school explorer, British explorer going to, discovering the lost city in the Amazons, it's based on a true story. And it's also a great film about his marriage too, and just how his wife supportive she was, and then how his son wanted to kind of follow in his footsteps, and how he became a really bigger part of the story. And it's a really terrific movie that I was fortunate enough to see at the Music Box when they had a 35mm print screening of it for the critics and for the public as well. That was a real treat for this year, and hopefully they bring it back at some point for some occasion.
Yeah,
because it should be seen on a big screen, and if possible on 35mm, because it looked gorgeous.
Yeah. So. Everybody I know I still haven't seen it. Everybody I know who has seen it really liked it, mm-hmm. and it was one of those movies that was completely under the radar. And like I said, it opened same weekend as the Fury, yeah. The Fate of the Furious, and everything got swallowed up that weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I don't know when would have been a great time to release it. I mean, of course, any movie like this, release it at the end of the year, and sure, but it could get buried then too, unfortunately.
Okay,
but it's really good, worth seeking out.
All right. Eric, what's number 10 on your list?
Well, that didn't take long. We have a match. Lost City of Z is my number 10 as well. I agree with everything Colin said. It's really cool to see kind of like he said, an old-fashioned explorer adventure come out like this. And it's kind of like Apocalypse Now without the madness involved.
Yeah.
Apocalypse Now wouldn't exist without the madness.
Well, true enough. We're living in it. But anyway... yeah, and it's just, I think the performances are really good. I mean, Robert Pattinson is good in the film. Sienna Miller, I think, is really terrific in the movie as his wife. It's not sort of the typical, the husband goes out and then the wife gets mad at the husband for going out and ignoring the family. It's kind of interesting to watch an adventure movie where he keeps getting to come back home. Like, you think he's going to be in the Amazon the whole time. Like, no, he comes back home for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he goes back out again, you nut. I think it's a really terrific movie, and it's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray very soon, so people should check it out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That's we have a match already. That didn't take very long, The Lost City of Z. Yeah. All right. So number 9 on my list of the best movies of 2017 so far is Personal Shopper. Speaking of Robert Pattinson, his co-star in the Twilight movies. Kristen Stewart, who I've done a complete 180 on over the past few years. It's just that she started out in really terrible, Panic Room is great, but she started out in really terrible movies. Those Twilight movies were terrible. That Snow White movie was awful. She clearly didn't care about those movies because, the stuff that she cares about is really interesting, and she's really, the first time I was like, whoa, was Adventureland. That was the first time where I was like, okay, maybe she's got something. But she's great, and this was a really creepy film, and she's great in it. It's a really, really great performance, and I just like the idea that she's taking all these risks as an actress, and choosing films that not many people are going to see, but she's doing great work in them. And I thought it was a very distinctively made film. It left a genuine impact on me, when it was over, and I think it worked on a bunch of different levels. And she's really— it's one of my favorite performances of the year. So that's it. That's a Personal Shopper. Is that out on?
Not yet.
It's Kristen Stewart in Personal Shopper, which is a movie that played for about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So, all right, what's your number nine, Colin?
Well, again, we have another match. My number nine is Personal Shopper.
There you go. Well, this is going to be good. It's going to be an interesting morning.
Yeah, I have a feeling this is going to happen a few more times.
Yeah, I think
really.
So, too, yeah.
But, yeah, no, this is shaping up to be a fascinating actor-director relationship between Kristen Stewart and Olivier Assayas, I think is how you pronounce his name. They did the Clouds of Sils Maria together as well, and she gave a really great performance in that. And then, and again, she's playing somebody's assistant in this one, too. I'm not sure why. If we're going for a trilogy in that respect, we're going to see another one. But no, it's turning out to be a really fascinating couple of films here, and I hope they make more movies together because they're like you said, they're multi-layered. They're just kind of fascinating to sort of put the puzzles together, and they give you a lot of food for thought at the end. Mm-hmm. And by the end, you're still not quite sure everything that happened, but it's never less than compelling throughout. So yeah.
I totally agree, obviously, because we both have it at number nine. We have to break, Eric, before we got to take a little break, and then we'll find out what Eric's ninth favorite movie of the year is. We are counting down the 10 best movies of 2017 so far because we're halfway through the year, and Colin and Eric have joined us live in studio for this, and we'll also talk about the worst movies of the year so far. All right, and we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and the great Steve Cochran at 6. We've got Wood Esmeralda Buy That coming up a little bit later on. And evidently my crew here is going to do something for my birthday, which is this morning. So we're going to do that as well. But right now we are talking about the best movies of the year so far. We are halfway through the movie year. And we always invite Colin Suter and Eric Childress down to the studio this time of year to talk about the best movies of the year so far. And so far, Colin and I have given our number 10 and number 9 best movies. My number 10 was John Wick, Chapter 2. My number 9 was Personal Shopper. Colin, what was your number 10 and 9? Remind everybody.
My number 10 was Lost City of Z, and number 9 was Personal Shopper.
All right. And what was your number 10, Eric?
My number 10 was The Lost City of Z.
And your number 9?
My number 9 is a film that actually hasn't opened here in Chicago, unless you count our film festival in 2016. But it's a film called The Other Half. It stars Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black. It's a film about personal demons and ghosts. She plays a woman who has a bipolar disorder, and she meets a guy that has suffering from some PTSD issues and a personal tragedy in his family life, and they come together and they form a romance. And it's not one of these typical Hollywood type things where two people have diseases and personal problems and we're going to cutesy it up and whatnot. They actually take both matters very seriously. Maslany, I think, is one of the best actresses working today.
If people have not seen Orphan Black, she's unbelievable.
I don't even watch that show for the plot anymore. I don't even know what's going on.
No,
frankly.
You know what? And it's in fact, the show's not as good as it once was.
Right.
But she's unbelievable.
I watch it for her. Watch it for her, which I don't say, you know, about television, about anything else, frankly. Yeah. And this is another one. It's sometimes hard to separate her from the 18 characters she plays on Orphan Black. But here's another one that could actually fit into that world. She's so good in it, and I can watch her do just about anything. And so I don't think this is – it's not – it's coming out on DVD later this month.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and that's The Other Half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. All right, number 8 on my list of the best movies of the year as we move up is Jordan Peele's Get Out, which is the success story of 2017 and probably will be. Even I know Wonder Woman is also up there, but this was a movie that cost, what, $5 million to make, and it's grossed, what, $370 million? Something like that?
Is it that much worldwide?
300 and something, yeah, worldwide, it's up there.
It's done well, yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of like profit, this is it.
Yeah.
It also became a phenomenon. This was a movie that doesn't have any stars in it, really. I mean, there's no bankable. I mean, there are people that we know are in it, but none of them are really bankable. You know, they don't open movies.
Right.
And Jordan Peele never directed a movie, never wrote a movie before. Well, he co-wrote Keanu, but you know, this is the first like full-on solo thing that he did. It's you know, Keegan's not in it. Jordan's not in it. and yet it touched a nerve. And it's a terrific movie. Right out of the gate, he's made a great sort of social thriller that is creepy and funny and has all the payoffs that you want in a suspense horror movie. And there's also a lot of social commentary in it that avoids stereotypes, that avoids preachiness. It's never less than incredibly entertaining and clever, and it'll make your skin crawl and it'll make you laugh sometimes at the same exact time. All the performances are great in it. Everybody is great in it. And it's my dad's favorite movie of the year so far. So,
would your dad have voted for Obama if he had a third term?
If he had a third term, yeah. What was the quote that somebody said, if a black guy was at a party with a bunch of white people now, they would go out of their way to say how much they enjoyed Get Out.
Yeah,
that was that. You remember that quote?
I heard that, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, and I enjoyed Get Out, and I'm white.
Right.
So there you go. That's number eight. Okay, Colin?
My number eight is a film that I guess some people would consider it a film for last year, but it didn't open in Chicago until like a month ago, I think, and that's I, Daniel Blake. Ken Loach's latest film, and
I'm so intrigued about this one, man.
It's so good. It's Dave Johns, who's a comedian. He plays a guy who has a heart attack, and you know, on the job, and he can't work anymore, so he has to get on welfare, and he's got to sort of relearn a new skill so he can go out and get a job again. And he's just dealing with all this bureaucracy and paperwork and red tape, and it's just one frustration after another for this guy. And he befriends a woman who is in the similar situation, only she's a single mom, and it's a really interesting relationship develops between the two of them. And it's a great film for anybody who's, I mean, we've all been in a situation where we've had to deal with some sort of government bureaucracy and the frustrations of that and the limitations of it, and just the debilitating morale that you'd have when you're dealing with stuff like that. And and I think Ken Loach just nails it, and Dave Johns is a great actor. I don't think I've seen him in anything before, but it's a really wonderful performance that he gives, and it is kind of getting one in late in his career, and hopefully it'll start, you know, a nice little late career acting career for him. I, Daniel Blake. I don't know where it's going to come up. I mean, IFC put it out, so it's anybody's guess what's yeah. going to happen to it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have a DVD release as of yet. Okay. I mean, this is one of those weirdo releases. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, we got screeners for it last year, mm-hmm. and we voted. I think we voted on it last year. So, but yeah, it didn't open until June this year.
So I'm considering it this year's movie.
Yeah, no,
so,
sure enough. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, Eric, number eight for you?
My number eight is also a horror film, but it's not Get Out, it is Raw. It is a French horror film about a young girl who's going to the weirdest veterinarian school I've ever seen in my life. That's all treated like a college, basically. There's frat
hazing.
That, thank you very much. That's the one I was looking for. All that kind of stuff. And she's a vegetarian, and she's got an older sister who goes to the school, and one day she gets kind of her first taste of meat in a hazing ritual, and it kind of has an effect on her. All of a sudden, she starts to get a little randy, and starts to crave the taste of meat wherever it might come from. And this movie reportedly, some people fainted at Toronto last year. I think that they're wusses. I don't know. I don't know what they were fainting at, because even when the film gets gross, it's done so in such a funny way that I don't see how it was possible to be that horrified by it if you understood what the film was going for. I like this film very much. I thought the performances were a lot of fun. It was creepy, but also, again, really funny at the same time. And I enjoyed the hell out of it.
My number seven is Raw. I echo everything you've said, except that I did think it was there were walkouts when I saw it.
Were there? Okay.
Yeah, there were. Okay. And there were things in it that I just was like, ugh! I mean, that just really made me move around in my seat in positions that I didn't think I could move around in, and little yelps came out of my body that in a great way, though, because that's what a great horror movie does. And in some ways, it's different. It's a completely different kind of movie. But the effect that it had on the audience in the same space where I saw the other movie I'm about to mention, it was very similar to the experience I had watching Goodnight Mommy. Mm. The audience vocally was like, I had for Goodnight Mommy, I had the oh hell no guy in the audience who was like during Goodnight Mommy's the last third of that movie, all are oh hell no, and I was really hoping he was in the audience that night I saw Raw, but he wasn't. But if he was, he would have broken the record for oh hell no's screamed at the screen.
Yeah.
I loved this movie. I thought it was really great, and everything that you said is right on target. And it's actually about something. It's just not disgusting or gross for being disgusting or gross. There's a reason why it is. And it's also, like you said, it's also shockingly funny. And it's great. So Raw was number 7 on my list. It's number 7 for you, Colin.
My number 7, and makes me even whiter than you, which is Get Out. So this is just one of the great feature-length Twilight Zone episodes that's ever been done. And I just love every little twist and turn in it. The last... Is it the last line? Or the second to last? The last line in the car.
Yeah.
Is just priceless. Yeah. The delivery is perfect. The timing and everything. And it's just... It's really interesting just watching the success story unfold for this film. And watching it sort of capture the zeitgeist of the moment and everything.
Because it really did come out of nowhere, and it touched a big time nerve.
Yeah, at a time when we needed that kind of thing. Yeah. And so this is this is another one of those movies that I'd love to watch again before the end of the year, just to see if it even more.
I've seen it 3 times. Yeah. And one of my, it also has, it contains many of my favorite moments of the year, but I think dude running at camera might be one of my favorite moments. I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And then just goes off to the right. And it's beautifully directed. I mean, Jordan Peele really made a great movie. I didn't know I could admire Jordan Peele more than I already did. But he's incredibly multi-talented, and I can't wait for his next movie. I just can't. Mm-hmm. So it was number 7 for you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number 7 for you, Eric?
Okay, since we're all having a competition of who's the whitest person in the room, my number 7 is T2 Trainspotting. I don't know what that means, but it has a bunch of white people in it.
It certainly does.
Yes.
Some pasty white people.
Very pasty, yeah. This is a film that, we don't get a lot of sequels about... following people 20 years down the road. We don't get many of them. And even the ones that we've had in the past haven't been that great. Your Texasvilles and things like that.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
I had successfully forgotten about that movie.
You're welcome.
Oh.
But this one is one that actually has a purpose. It's, it's a film that's rooted in nostalgia, but is about... trying to find a new purpose down the road and trying to forgive the sins of the past that some people who have not moved on are clearly unable to do. And I think it's even though these were not great fun characters, I mean, at least these decent characters in the original movie, it's interesting to see particularly that, to see how people who, not exactly the best people in the world, where they are 20 years down the road, bullies and drug addicts and things like that. And it was just great revisiting this cast again, and it made me want to watch the original movie again, which I did immediately afterwards. And, it's got a climax that's inspired by Blade Runner, for God's sakes. And there's a lot of really fun choices throughout the movie. The cast just steps right back in the line, and I really like this movie a lot.
Number 11 on my list.
Mm.
Just right off. All right, so we got a break. All right, everybody, hang on. We're going to take a little break. We'll come back. Colin and Eric are here live in studio. We're halfway through the movie year, so we're giving you our favorite movies of 2017 so far. We'll also go through the worst list as well. All right, here, coming up on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio, seventh floor of Trib Tower, and we're here till 5 a.m. It is it's halfway through the year, so every year at this time, we get together, Colin Suter, Eric Childress, who review movies with me every Monday morning here on the show. They come in studio and we talk about the halfway point. We talk about our favorite movies of the year so far and our least favorite movies of the year so far. And so, Colin, Eric, welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Thank you.
All right, we'll do a little catch-up here for people, a recap. We're talking about our top 10 favorite movies of 2017 thus far. My list, number 10, John Wick, Chapter 2. Number 9, Personal Shopper. Number 8, Get Out. Number 7, Raw. Colin, why don't you recap?
My number 10 is Lost City of Z. Number 9, Personal Shopper. Number 8, I, Daniel Blake. And number 7, Get Out.
Okay, and Eric?
My number 10 is The Lost City of Z. Number 9, The Other Half. 8, Raw. And 7, T2, Trainspotting.
Okay, all right, so we'll begin now with my number 6. And my number 6 is Beatrice at Dinner, which features one of my favorite performances of the year. Well, two, actually, because Lithgow's amazing. Everybody's great in it. But this movie pretty much belongs to Salma Hayek. I really adore this movie, and I think Salma Hayek is great in it. I think Mike White is one of my favorite writers, just in general. But as Colin, when we reviewed this movie when it came out, you specifically said that he's a great writer for female characters, mm-hmm. and he's done great work with that. And You're the Dog with Molly Shannon, and so many other The Good Girl with Jennifer Aniston, and The Show Enlightened was so great. And he's just a great writer in general, and he works well with this director. And it's a timely movie mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. It's also a movie that's about thoughts and talking and ideals, and Salma Hayek's character is just so she's really mysterious too in a lot of ways. There's a lot of stuff that could be cliched, like she's a healer and a massage therapist and all that stuff, and that could have really gone down like some claptrap nonsense. But that's the core of her character. It's the soul of her character. She really cares about all living things, and the conflict that she has at this dinner party where her car breaks down. She ends up at this dinner party at this rich client's house, and she's completely out of place there. And the main guest is this realtor, kind of a Trump-like jerk, played by John Lithgow, who is phenomenal in it. And it's this battle between these two characters and how the other characters within this dinner party react to it. It's tense. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. The ending is absolutely, completely heartbreaking, but it's great and it's very entertaining and really, really smart. And man, I really hope that they put a campaign behind Salma Hayek. I really do, because she deserves it, man. It's a great performance. And Colin, you mentioned this when we reviewed it when it was released, that we sometimes forget how good Salma Hayek is, because she's made a lot of terrible movies, and mm-hmm. you know was in both Grown Ups movies, just to point that out. And she was in that I'm Kevin James and I'm a Fighter and I Punch People in the Face movie.
Here Come the Boom.
Yeah, she was in that too. So she's done some stuff. And then every once in a while she'll be like really kick ass in a movie. And this is, I think, the best performance she's ever given, at least since Frida. And I even think this is better. So Beatrice at Dinner. That's my number 6.
I almost feel like that movie pairs nicely with Get Out.
Yeah, I can see
totally.
You know? Yeah,
I think the movie it's still kind of limited, but you see that it is drawn an audience, for mm-hmm. a limited release. So I think that it is kind of striking that same, nerve that people are feeling right now.
There was a good sized crowd when I saw it, and anyway, Beatrice at Dinner. That's my number 6.
My number 6 is It Comes at Night, Trey Edward Schultz follow up to Krisha. And he is proving himself. The Krisha was no fluke. This guy's the real deal. And he just created this very tense, moody horror film where you're not quite sure what the horror is, but you know it's out there. But it takes place in just this house, mostly, and just like Krisha did, where you have two families who you don't quite trust each other, but they're trying to. And sometimes the horror comes from that. And there's a lot of great performances throughout the whole thing, and it's just a great, moody, tense little horror film
that people hate.
Yeah, mm. A lot of people hate. Yeah.
I've gotten more complaints from listeners about my recommendation for that movie mm. than I have in years.
Really?
Wow. Oh, absolutely. People saying that it's like the worst movie they've ever seen.
Well, no.
Well, yeah.
My response to that is to see more movies. Yeah. When exactly. I hear that.
Yeah.
You
know. But seriously, the feedback has been overwhelmingly negative from people who I've recommended it to.
So it's this year's The Witch.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, same from the same studio. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Same
all
release
right.
pattern.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hey, I love it. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
As
all
well
right.
you should.
Go see it, everyone.
So that's Colin's number six. What's your number six?
I'm lightening the mood a little bit. Lego Batman movie.
Oh,
that's my
boy.
Number six.
All right.
Yeah, I think this is one of the funniest movies of the year. As a huge supporter of the Lego movie from a few years ago, just to see this movie, not just deliver on all the great laughs, the Batman character that we love so much from the Lego movie, and gave him his own movie, gave him his own spinoff movie. But for this to actually be about something, it'd be about the sort of the loneliness of Batman and the need, those even the things that we saw in the Christopher Nolan movies and the Tim Burton films about Alfred trying to get Batman or Bruce Wayne a family, someone to love, something like that. And this movie has that, and it has a lot of fun with the Robin character and all the other Warner Brothers entities throughout the movie. I know this, for some reason there's some weird backlash going on about this movie. People are not – I don't know why, but it seems there's been a lot of negativity since the film left theater.
Why?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like a Lego Batman movie. Yeah.
What are you, Scrooge?
I don't know. That's why I'm just like, really?
So stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Stupid. Exactly. But it's not. It's really, really funny and also really moving. It's great manic action in it too. I had a blast.
Yeah. With it. I liked it a lot too. It didn't make my top 10, but I liked it a lot. Very entertaining. Why would somebody diss that movie?
Know.
I don't understand.
Stupid.
You got to get off Twitter.
Stop
with the Twitter.
It's just so stupid. Okay, we have to break. We got the news coming up and then the top five. That timed out pretty well.
Yeah.
This is a professional radio show, by the way. I don't know if you guys know. I have a plaque downstairs.
I do.
In the sidewalk down because of this.
Yeah.
All right. We have to take. Thank you for coming out to that, Eric. All right, we got to take a break. The news is coming up next. And the top five best movies of 2017 so far and the top 10 worst. Right here on 720 WGN. Well, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. Yeah. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. We're going to play another round of Would Esmeralda Buy That? That's coming up, and it's my birthday, so the crew here, I guess, is going to celebrate my birthday for some in some fashion or form. So that'll be coming up in a little bit. But right now, my friends Colin Suter and Eric Childress are joining me live in studio. We are halfway through the movie year, so we are giving you our favorite movies of 2017 so far. 10 best movies and 10 worst movies. And I welcome Colin and Eric back. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. We are actually at our halfway through our list, so let's do a recap. My number 10 movie on the best list is John Wick Chapter 2, number 9, Personal Shopper, number 8, Get Out, number 7, Raw, and number 6, Beatrice at Dinner, and Colin?
Number 10, Lost City of Z, number 9, Personal Shopper, number 8, I, Daniel Blake, number 7, Get Out, number 6, It Comes at Night.
Okay, my number 5 is It Comes at Night. Mm-hmm.
I missed mine.
Oh, you missed yours?
My recap.
Oh, your recap. I'm sorry. Go
it's
ahead.
Okay.
I'm fine. Sorry. I was so excited because he said It Comes at Night, and that's my next one.
No, I get it. You should be excited. I'll forego. You want? Go ahead.
No. Go. Okay. Go. Please. My fault.
Number 10 is The Lost City of Z. Number 9, The Other Half. 8, Raw. 7, T2 Trainspotting. And 6, The Lego Batman movie.
Okay. You guys, can you guess what my number 5 is?
The Witch.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
This year is The Witch.
Right.
It Comes at Night, a great movie, and I don't I do not apologize for recommending it. It's your fault that you didn't like it, and not mine. It's a great movie. It is tense. It's creepy. It is beautifully directed, like phenomenally well made. Performances top notch all the way through. I love the ambiguity of it. I think that's one of the reasons why people get so angry about it was because there's no simple answer to it. This is a movie where the ambiguity is what the movie is, and it's about human nature, and it's about distrust, and it's about anxiety and paranoia and all of that stuff. You're never explained what happened to the world. I don't think you need to. I don't want it. You know, you're never explained what this disease or whatever is, where these people come from. There's a lot of mystery in that. There's an incredible scene in the movie, and it's a very quiet movie. It's very slow moving, and there's nothing wrong with that. There is some incredibly scary imagery in it, and some incredibly tense scenes where nothing happens. There's a scene in the movie between Joel Edgerton and Christopher Abbott, where they're sharing a glass of whiskey. They each have a glass of whiskey, and they're talking, and Christopher Abbott sort of slips up and says something about his past that is contrary to what he had said earlier in the movie. Nothing is really spoken, but at that moment, I was like, you know, like, sure, it had like an effect where I was like grabbing the side of my seat, like, oh my God, what's going to happen now? And the last, you know, 15 minutes of this movie is astounding and astonishing. And again, like Beatrice, has a heartbreaking ending. Like the final shot of It Comes at Night is a heartbreaker, absolutely heartbreaking. It is a great film, one of the best of the year, and I make no apologies for recommending it. I'm sorry folks were so angry and hated it so much, and there were people vocally in the theater that I saw it, vocally yelling about they thought it was the worst movie they'd ever seen.
Yeah, see more movies.
So, anyway, It Comes at Night is my number five. All right.
My number five is going to be too low for you guys, probably, but my number five is Baby Driver. Edgar Wright's insanely visceral and insanely funny and just insane car chase musical hybrid of sorts that just shows that just what a tireless director Edgar Wright is and what a boundless imagination he has. The cast is perfect all the way through. I love Kevin Spacey in this movie. I think his performance is just so much fun to watch. You know, this is another one of those success stories of this year that it's be interesting to see how it evolves. So I know I'm going to stop because I know we're not going to.
That's not the last you're going to hear of Baby Driver.
Yeah. So. Colin, you know, just when Colin thinks he knows us, my number five is Baby Driver.
Okay.
So
he knows, but he knows me.
Yeah, exactly. We know where it's on your list. Yeah, that's right. Fine. There's very few spoiler alerts coming up for that. So we'll leave a little bit of room for that eventually. But no, there's so much love about Baby Driver. I liked it even more the second time I saw it.
Going this weekend as part of my birthday weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna Baby Driver followed by Gale Street.
By the way, just really quickly, last week they did a screening of the new Spider-Man movie for the press, and they had us in the AMC River East new Dolby Atmos theater. And they did a whole demonstration of the sound system and the screen and everything. And they played the clip from the opening car chase scene from Baby Driver to show us like just why this is a perfect movie for this presentation, because you're in the Baby Driver's head. And the surround sound in that theater is, you will never hear it like that again.
Well,
so if you're going to go see it, I recommend spend the extra bucks and see it in the
Atmos. Let me say something about the Dolby cinemas, because they have one at the Village Crossing in Skokie.
Oh, okay.
And I've seen several movies there in that theater. I saw The Fate of the Furious there. I saw Kong. Mm-hmm. I saw Kong in an IMAX. I'm trying to remember what the other ones. Oh, a Covenant. I saw Alien Covenant in that theater. And a couple of other movies. Those theaters, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. A beautiful, crisp, clear screen. The sound is spectacular. Oh, Wonder Woman. I saw Wonder Woman in the Dolby. They opened it. I want to say they opened that theater at the beginning of this year.
Mm.
Or at least that, because it's only one theater in the entire plexus over there in Skokie.
Yeah.
So if you have the option, check for Dolby, AMC Dolby. I'm glad you brought that up because it's great. The presentation is great. If you're going to see like a big crazy action movie or one of these, you know, like especially Baby Driver, which I don't think is playing in the Dolby Theater in Skokie,
Yeah,
I'm not really sure. But anyway, because I think Transformers is in there now or something.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's but they made Baby Driver for that experience.
I totally agree with you.
Did a whole thing about it and that thing. So yeah.
I totally agree with you about it. It's those theaters are great. At least the one in Skokie that I go to on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Been going there now for a few months and seeing. I always opt for the Dolby Theater when I can because it's great stuff. I'm sorry. Oh, say Baby Driver. Yeah,
no. Baby Driver is my number five.
Yeah.
And I was saying, we've seen the movie the second time. It was interesting to me that even though there's some really funny stuff in the movie, I was watching the movie the second time more as an action movie and almost a character study at times, that watching Ansel Elgort as Baby try to change his life. I really adapted more to his performance the second time around. I really liked the relationship between him and Lily James. The first time I saw him more pouty during the second half of the movie, and this time I saw him more as a guy with like the weight of the world on his shoulders and how to get out of it. And when there's a moment where he floors the car into something is one of my favorite moments of anything this year. Yeah. And then that just leads to a great foot chase and some tremendous violence. I love the shifting relationships and the who goes heel and whatnot in certain times of the movie.
Yeah.
It's so much fun, and I'm glad people are going to see it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, all except right. Anthony Bourdain, apparently.
Oh, yeah, Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, he should stick to other parts of the world in his food.
Well, yeah,
that I'll never eat.
Yeah, I love Anthony Bourdain.
Do you?
I do. Always have. Always
don't.
Have. I've read his books. I watch his show. I love him. Mm. But he basically said "F Baby Driver" on his Twitter account. I thought it was funny. I don't care because I like Anthony Bourdain.
I don't.
Okay. Number four on my list is Logan. Which is currently my favorite comic book movie ever made, and
wow,
yeah, it took over Spider-Man 2's slot I've seen it three times, and it gets better and richer every single time I see it. It is not at all your typical comic book movie or Marvel film. It plays more like a Western and a story of redemption than anything else. Hugh Jackman. And Patrick Stewart, and I'm not. This isn't hyperbole. They both deserve Oscar nominations for their performances in this movie. I think they're great in it, and the little girl is phenomenal. I love the style of it. I think it's beautifully directed. It's about something. The action scenes are phenomenal, and because it's rated R, you get to see what the Wolverine's blades actually do to people's heads and bodies and arms and legs. There's a lot of emotion involved in this movie. It's dark, and it's beautiful on every level. It's a great action movie, great comic book movie. Damn it, I cried. I've seen the movie three times, and I cry at the end every time I see it. So I can't recommend Logan highly enough. And, in a year so far where this is like my fourth favorite movie, I got to say some of the quality that has come out so far this year has been pretty amazing for this movie, Logan, as great as it is to be number four. So, all right, we got a break. And then we come back, we'll get four through one for the rest of us, and we'll start with Colin when we come back right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, it's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. You program at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And also, we're going to play yet another round of Would Esmeralda Buy That? That's all coming up. Right now, my friends Colin Suter and Eric Childress are live with me in studio, and we are recapping the movies so far this year. We're halfway through the year, so we are telling you our top 10 best movies of 2017 so far, and we'll get to the worst in a little bit. Another real quick recap for those people who are just tuning in. My number 10 best movie of the year is John Wick Chapter 2, number 9, Personal Shopper, number 8, Get Out, number 7, Raw, number 6, Beatrice at Dinner, number 5, It Comes at Night, number 4, Logan. And Colin?
Number 10 is Lost City of Z, number 9, Personal Shopper, number 8, I, Daniel Blake, number 7, Get Out, number 6, It Comes at Night, number 5, Baby Driver.
All right, and Eric?
And my number 10, Lost City of Z, number 9, The Other Half, 8, Raw, 7, T2 Trainspotting, 6, The Lego Batman Movie, and 5, Baby Driver.
Okay. Colin, what is your number 4 movie?
Number four is Colossal, a really great movie about alcoholism, codependency, relationships, and monsters. this is just one of those great, ingenious ideas that is utilized for all of its potential. And those movies are so rare, but they're so much so great when they happen. I got another one on this list I'll talk about later. It's filled with great performances. Probably the biggest surprise performance is what's his name?
Jason Sudeikis.
Thank you. Who turns in a really terrific performance that kind of shows more of his range than we've seen before. This is just one of the every time it introduces a new idea, just like clicks and just gives the viewer a wonderful surprise. And but it's also about so many things. It's about, like, all those things that I said before, and just brings it all together in this really profound, beautiful way. And it's a movie you can't really describe to people. It's a really hard movie to sell to people.
It is, yeah.
The poster doesn't really tell you everything. Can't say I'm surprised that it kind of disappeared.
The other problem is not only is it a hard movie to describe to people, but you don't want to describe much of it.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because part of the joy of this movie is that you discover new things and the surprises that are in there. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very difficult movie to sell, even if we could talk about it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, my number four is Colossal.
Okay.
My number four is It Comes at Night, which you guys have talked about eloquently. I think that your line, if you don't like it, it's your fault, should be the new tagline for the film. I think that should be the new, just keep telling yourself it's only a movie. I'm going to propose that to A24 because this is an absolutely unsettling film. We've seen apocalyptic stories before. We've seen movies about people fighting disease and hauling themselves off or holding themselves off in a cabin in the woods and stuff like that. We've seen the outsiders come in and the mistrust and all that kind of stuff. But the way that Schultz tells the story and the way that he uses the framing and aspect ratios and plays with that kind of stuff, and if people who like this movie should be talking more about the last third of this movie, because there's a lot left up to interpretation.
Yep.
As to what exactly happens during that stretch. Edgerton is terrific in this movie, really good. It's really great suspense sequences. There is some action in the movie. I don't think the movie is as slow going as you mentioned, maybe because I was just riveted to it.
I wasn't riveted.
Right, I know that. I don't want people to think that it's a complete slow burn, because there are action moments and suspense sequences in this film. Riley Keough, who I'm becoming a fan of too, has some really nice scenes.
By the way, do you know she's married to the Doof Warrior in real life?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
She's married to the Doof Warrior.
Does he look like that in real life?
No, he doesn't.
No. Does he play guitar?
Yes, he does. He's in a band.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
But she's married to the Doof Warrior. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Good for him.
Good for him is right.
I'm completely thrown off my game right now.
I don't know what to say.
Wow.
Well, they met on set, and because she's in Fury Road.
Yeah.
And so, Conan O'Brien was interviewing her and said, "Let me get this straight. You're actually married to that dude shooting flamethrower out of his the Doof Warrior?" And she's like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Let's show a picture of him." So they show a picture of him. And he goes, "So did he look like this when you met him?" And she said, "No, I actually didn't. None of our scenes were together. So I didn't meet him until we went back to do dubbing and reshoots when he didn't have any makeup on. Then I saw him and went, oh." So now they're married. She's married to the Doof Warrior.
Well,
nice.
Good for him. Good for him.
Wish I could have been to that wedding.
That would have been fantastic. Zero. Are you kidding?
Oh God. I'm out of it now.
Yeah.
But no, It Comes at Night. And again, the ending. I mean, I know people don't like abrupt endings, and that can turn people off. I just watched the end of Fargo recently, and I know someone who's not happy with that. But no, it's
the season. This season.
This season three.
Oh, I loved it.
I'm not. I'm just.
Say nothing.
I won't
say nothing.
I'm not saying a word.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Move on.
Nick So Fargo. Anyway, but no, it comes at night. Seriously, it's fantastic. I don't know why people are so turned off by this movie for whatever reason. They need to see more movies or they're stupid. There you go.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We have to break and for the news. And when we come back, we'll have our top three, and then we'll tell you about the worst movies of 2017 so far. All right, we'll be right back. News is up next on WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hope you're having a good morning. Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requested now, 312-981-7200. Joining me live in studio is Colin Suter and Eric Childress, and we are running down the movies. We're running a little bit out of time, so we're not going to do any recap for this segment. So we are up to number three on our lists of the best movies of 2017 so far. Number three on my list is The Big Sick. This is the movie that we talked about just this past weekend, and it is beautifully written and beautifully directed. It's funny, really, really, really funny, and one of the best romantic comedies I've seen. And it is a romantic comedy. I know a lot of people might not like to put it under that umbrella, but it's a romantic comedy and beautifully done. Kumail is great in it. Zoe Kazan is great in it. I mean, what can you say about Ray Romano and especially Holly Hunter in this movie? I adore this movie. I love it on every level. It's so human and so really funny and so touching and heartbreaking and real. And as you said when we reviewed it, Eric, this past weekend, it ends on such a beautiful note. Like, it's really, that's where you want the movie to end, and it ends that way. And you walk out really feeling good after having a lot of different feelings while you're watching the movie. I adore this movie. I think it's great, and I'm glad people are going to see it. And I know that it opens completely wide on the 14th,
yeah.
And I hope that people go out and see it. It's called The Big Sick, and it is and don't let the title turn you off, because some people are kind of turned off by the title. Don't let it turn you off. It's a really, really funny, entertaining, wonderful romantic comedy, and it's one of my favorites, my third favorite movie of the year. Okay, Colin?
My number three film is the animated film to beat this year. It was a Japanese animated film called Your Name. This is played at the Music Box this past spring and had a pretty good run there. It's a crazy story about a boy and a girl. They don't know each other, but they each wake up. She wakes up as a boy and can't figure out why she's has this other life, and he, same thing, vice versa. And they have this connection and this sort of, they sort of try to communicate to each other through this connection. And there's also a matter of a comet hurtling towards Earth, which complicates things as well. And it's a really just a fascinating story to watch unfold. It's also very funny. It's also very musical in a way. And you just never know where it's going to go. And I just remember just the emotional experience of watching this film and getting really caught up in the characters and really rooting for them. And it's just one of those great unexpected experiences I've had at a movie this year. And to me, it's the best animated film of the year so far. I don't know if there's anything that in the pipeline that could beat it. I know there's another Pixar movie coming out later this year, so we'll see what goes on there. But Your Name is one of my absolute favorites of this year. And what do we know of a release date on that for DVD?
Not yet. I mean, Funimation is the company that released the film, and they haven't set a Blu-ray date for it yet. Okay. Imagine sometime in the fall.
Just keep it in your radar.
Yeah.
Your Name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Eric, number three for you.
My number three is The Big Sick.
There, look at that. We got a match.
We got a match. It was one of my favorite movies at Sundance this year. Maybe this should have actually been the title for It Comes at Night. but swap those two. You mentioned earlier about Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart getting nominations for this. I think Hunter should be in the
Absolutely.
Conversation. Romano could be in the discussion.
Absolutely.
I think Kumail and Emily's screenplay should be in contention. This is a movie that is going to find an audience because it's coming along at a time when we need something to feel good about, you know. And I think this is going to, again, another movie like Get Out, like Wonder Woman, is going to find, you know, maybe in a slower pace.
Yeah.
But people, when people discover this movie, they're going to, you know, want to thank Kumail personally for it.
Yeah. I didn't bring this up when we reviewed, but I have one complaint about the movie. One complaint. It takes place in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it certainly wasn't shot here.
Mm-hmm.
But they order a pizza, and it's not cut in squares. I had a problem with that.
Okay. At least it wasn't like in Ghostbusters where they ordered Papa John's in New York.
Right. All right. So number two on my list has been mentioned already. It's Colossal. A movie that had a really sort of a profound effect on me. And as Colin mentioned, it is a movie that is it's a hard movie to describe. You know, we know that it's a kaiju movie, and that I don't want to get into more details than that. But it is a film that is about codependency and being stuck in abusive relationships. It's also about alcoholism, and yet it's very funny. And I know it doesn't those things don't sound on the surface to be funny. But they are funny, and the performances across the board are great. And you mentioned Jason Sudeikis, who knocks it out of the park. But Anne Hathaway is amazing. I think it's the best performance she's ever given.
I forgot to mention that.
And Anne Hathaway is she's. Right. I mean, it's the movie is all about her.
Yeah.
It's a great movie that deals with topics that have been, you know, the basis for countless movies in the past, but it is the most original movie of the year. I've never seen anything like it. And what it does and what it attempts and how it combines different genres, it's never been done before. It was my favorite movie of the year until last week. But it's seriously, Colossal is a special, special movie on many, many levels. So that's my number two.
My number two is The Big Sick. And
we really like that movie, don't we?
Well, you know, it's just one of those great humanist comedies that reminds you of, like, the best James L. Brooks movies. It reminds you of About a Boy, you know, that kind of film.
Yeah.
Just succeeds so well at balancing comedy and drama in a way that just looks effortless. And I always respond to that kind of effortlessness in a film.
Yep.
So, my number two is The Big Sick.
Okay. All right. Number two.
Colossal.
All right, yeah. We got another match.
That's right, we do. That's right, we do. When I saw this movie the first time, you know, I was struck with the originality of it. I was struck by the performances. I've been saying for several years now how great Sudeikis has been in growing into a leading man kind of role.
Yeah.
And here, they subvert your expectations a bit. More than a bit.
Completely.
to the point that as much as I love the movie, I was kind of angry at it for taking certain turns because you want it to go one way, and then when it doesn't, you go, well, what the hell?
Yeah,
you know, because you want certain things to work out. And it takes a turn, although there's an image in the movie where Sudeikis finds something out, and he's in the park, and he's just got his leg up.
Yeah.
That's my favorite moment in the film. I can't describe what it is. And you want to talk about perfect final moments in the film?
Oh, my God.
The final moment. If Anne Hathaway ever nailed a moment on film, her final moment in this movie is better than anything she does in Les Miserables.
It's really – you're not kidding. Yeah. It's really amazing because that moment destroyed me.
Yeah.
On a personal level. And like her reaction, because it's so funny because – in that final scene when she walks into this place, I was like, don't go in there.
Yeah.
Especially after what you just went through.
Right.
That's the last place you want to sit right now.
Yeah.
Killed me. It's such a great movie.
It's pretty perfect.
Yeah.
And that's coming out August 1st on Blu-ray.
Okay.
People need to discover this.
Absolutely.
Movie.
Colossal. Mm-hmm. Really great. All right. My number one is Baby Driver. you know, for all the reasons, if you want to go back to the podcast and listen to the 10 minutes that we did, I did ranting and raving about how great it was. I'm going to see it again this Saturday. I'm going Saturday to see it again. You know, everything that you guys said about it, I echo 100%. I was just giddy during this movie. The joy that I felt for the entire running time of this movie, watching how truly incredibly talented and how much Edgar Wright loves movies and loves making them. As you mentioned, it's a car chase musical. That's the best way, I guess, a heist car chase musical is the best way I can describe it. And there are sequences in this movie that where I was just like kind of jumping up and down in my seat like a 9-year-old, and I actually welled up several times because of how good it was. It just made me so happy to be in the theater watching that. And these sequences, and there's a sequence you said, the foot chase scene with the song Hocus Pocus by the band Focus, is my favorite sequence of the year in any movie. I was just like a maniac. Beautifully directed. It's just pure cinema. I loved every single frame of Baby Driver, and so far it's my favorite movie of the year. All right, number one.
My number one is a movie that completely blindsided me. I almost didn't go to the screening because I just didn't think I was going to care that much about it. But my number one is Logan.
Yeah.
This was a huge surprise and a really welcome surprise. It is like the anti-Marvel movie in every way. There's no Stan Lee cameo. There's no climax where somebody's holding a giant glowing orb that is the energy that takes over the world, or none of that crap.
There's no post cookie or
anything like that. It's just a straight up ultra violent character study that is just beautiful in every turn. It's just it does for Marvel movies what Alfonso Cuarón did for Harry Potter movies. It's got that kind of, you know, dare
That's
to be
great
different.
That's a great analogy, by the way, man.
Yeah, it's just like a dare to be different kind of movie that I think Marvel really needed to make. And it earns the Johnny Cash song at the end.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. I mean, it was like, man, I'm really sad to see this character go now.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I shouldn't say that. But I mean, it's a
well,
beautiful...
Hugh Jackman said he wasn't going to play him again.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah. So, all right, fine. So, but I mean, this has the advantage because I just watched it again a couple nights ago. But I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful movie.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you, man. I agree with you 100%. All right, Eric.
Yeah, the talents.
Yeah, look at that.
That's
oh yeah, Logan. I kind of saw that.
I knew that was going to happen.
I knew
it was going
to
happen.
My number one film of the year so far is Logan. To me, this is the most complete movie that I saw in a first viewing. The first time I saw it, for all the reasons that you guys have already talked about. This wasn't a film that, you know, people for years have been wanting Wolverine to go the full R.
Yeah.
You know, really, you know, just like they felt like a little bit cheated that, like, you know, he's stabbing people, but we don't really see the gross impact of it.
That takes about 3 minutes in this movie.
Yes. That's exactly right. And then some. And but this wasn't in any way a stunt in a reaction to how much money Deadpool made and how it was like, oh, look, we can make an R-rated comic book movie now. This wasn't – they took the material so seriously that every time there is one of those moments, you feel it. And it, you want to talk about subverting expectations. There's a sequence in a farmhouse that stunned me, absolutely stunned me. And again, you know, Hugh Jackman, we've said it before, you know, on the segment that there are few actors who can commit to a role like that so long over years. I think Downey's doing it with Tony Stark currently. I think he has that same level of commitment. Hugh Jackman clearly recognized what this role meant to him in his career.
Yeah.
And he has returned to it and returned to its fans and really has retired this character with grace and dignity. And the best X-Men movie, one of the best comic book movies we've ever seen, one of the best movies of the year. The best movie of the year so far, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, there you go. So that's our list of the 10 best. Let's just go quickly through the list of the worst, okay? I'll do my 10. You guys do your 10. And I caught up with a couple that I didn't see when we initially reviewed them.
I'm so sorry.
Number 10 is Chips. Number 9, Underworld Blood Wars. Number 8, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Don't Tell Lies or Tales or whatever the hell it's called. Number 7, Ghost in the Shell. Number 6, Rings. Number 5, Boss Baby. Number 8, XX. Horribly disappointed by that movie. Number 3, Going in Style. Number 2, The Mummy. Number 1, Baywatch. All right, Colin.
Number 10, Going in Style. Number 9, Pirates of the Caribbean 5. Number 8, number 8, Split. Number 7, The Mummy. Number 6, Everything, Everything. Number 5, Rings. Number 4, The Space Between Us. Number 3, 50 Shades Darker. Number 2, Transformers The Last Knight. And number 1, The Book of Henry.
Hmm. Wow.
Okay.
Still got to see that.
I know. I'm going to see it. I am.
You should go, man.
Just out of curiosity. Yeah. All right.
I don't want to oversell it.
No. Too late. Too late. I'm going. That's all there is to it. I'm going. Number 10, Table 19.
I never saw that.
Oh, you shouldn't. Either. You don't do it.
Okay.
Number 9, XX. Number 8, Rough Night. Number 7, Baywatch. Number 6, Chips. Number 5, The Space Between Us. Number 4, Fist Fight. Number 3, Rings. Number 2, 50 Shades Darker. And number 1, I'm sorry, Nick, The Assignment.
It's certifiable.
It is high grade garbage.
I haven't seen that yet.
No, you have to see it.
No, you do.
You got to see it.
I know. We'll see it. Yeah. I definitely want to.
I mean, seriously, on my couch, jaw floor for an hour and a half, just going, whoa, what?
Yeah.
By the way, it's the second best thing that Walter Hill has done this year, his voice cameo in Baby Driver.
Yeah, if we're ranking 1 and 2, yes, that would be
correct. That's another detail about Baby Driver that I love that, you know, and I recognized his voice immediately, mm-hmm. and I was like, Edgar Wright, you son of a bitch. And it was just like, he's making you can't make a getaway driver movie and not acknowledge Walter Hill.
Yeah. Right.
Because the driver is the greatest. Yeah. And I just thought that was just it was, because it happens at the end of the movie, near the end of the movie, I was just like, oh, I like it even more.
You have that guy vouch for that
exactly,
character.
Exactly,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So anyway, well, that was fun, guys.
Yeah.
July looks like it's going to be fun, though. I mean, for the rest of the month.
July's got good stuff.
Lots of good look
Dunkirk,
to
War, good stuff. War Apes. Of the Planet of the Apes, Atomic
Ghost Story.
Blonde, Ghost Story. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. Big Sick opens wide so people can see.
Right.
It.
Yep.
So, all right, cool. We'll continue for the next 6 months, and then you guys will come back down here in January.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right, guys. See you later.
All righty.